Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, it's time to meet the beautiful, all the way from Hawaii, Dr. Rupa Wong. Welcome, Rupa.
Hi, Dr. K. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to do this podcast because Dr. Wong is a really renowned, very well-known ophthalmologist, and she has been in practice for 13 years in private practice. Her training in ophthalmology was at NYU, and she went on to do her fellowship training in pediatric ophthalmology and adult strabismus. And she is currently working in Honolulu with the beautiful family. She's one of the inspirational boss girls on Instagram, whose account I look at all the time when I'm feeling like, oh, it's hard, this life of running a practice, seeing patients and managing and trying to be the best academician that you can. It's killer.
It is. It's not easy. And, you know, I don't ever want to portray it as being easy. And I want to share my struggles so that people also know that it's okay to feel like overwhelmed sometimes, because sometimes it is overwhelming.
It's very overwhelming. And you have the added challenge of, you know, being a woman and then being a mother. You're Indian. I'm Indian. So that's interesting. And then you married an Asian guy. So you have gorgeous children. So you have three, I have four. It's been a constant struggle to be the best mom and be the, like, you know, be the Indian tiger mom that I am. And I know you probably are too.
But it is hard. And then also to just be there for them when they want to just hang out. And sometimes, you know, we have to put those barriers. I need to get work done till 5 p.m. And then we'll play Exploding Kittens or whatever it is.
Is that a thing? Exploding Kittens?
Exploding Kittens playing is now? A hard game.
I don't know. We had Legos, but Exploding Kittens.
Oh, we have a lot of Legos, too. Lots of Legos, too.
What ages are your kids right now?
They are 7, 9, and 11.
Oh, difficult. But really fun ages. I hope you enjoy it, because pretty soon they don't want to spend time with you after age 13.
I know. That's why I really, with COVID and everything, I just feel like 2020 was a lot of reflection for me in terms of what I wanted personally and for my family. And so it's why I've actually cut back some of my clinical hours so that I could be here with the kids and really help with the virtual school and the transitions. And because I know I can always go full time
later,
you know, 5-10 years from now. But I do find it interesting, because I always say, oh, I work part time because I'm in the clinic 2 days a week and the operating room 1 day a week. But I remember my chairman at Boston Children's, he was only in the clinic 1 day a week. He never said he worked part-time. He was doing research and other things. I'm doing all these other things too, right? As I'm sure you are. But there's this tendency to say, oh, a woman is working part-time, whereas a man is doing all this other administrative stuff, right?
And he's still calling that work. That's so freaking true. I remember all of our attendings at clinic like 2 days a week and then surgery, and they mysteriously disappeared doing important things. And we thought they were all busy running the world. So it's a mindset that we're all given that we just trust to be true, but we don't even adopt it for ourselves. You know?
Exactly.
It's very true. Well, it's been a huge challenge. And I think that's so important that a lot of women, pre-meds, med students, college kids looking to start their lives. I remember being 20 and wanting to and worried that, like, can I have a life and be a doctor? Can I have be a truly good wife or a truly good mother? And I think we're doing it right. We're trying.
I think so. And I think but I think that question is still so pervasive, and I get all of those messages from Instagram, and I'm sure you do too. Just, I've been told I can't be a surgeon and a good mom. I don't have anyone that's a physician in my family. I mean, in my family, I had my mother, who's a physician, I had aunts that were physicians, I had cousins, older cousins that were, you know, female cousins that were physicians. So I saw that as an example. So it really was never a thought to me that I couldn't do both. But I think for many women, they're being told otherwise. And I think to see the example of how you can integrate your work in your life, and it's not always going to be this 50-50 balance, but it's possible, I think that's really empowering for them, because it opens up these avenues that they didn't think were likely for them.
I think it's really important to take time when you are younger and starting out in your career. You want to take off like a rocket when you finish fellowship and residency. You're the sharpest, best trained and most confident surgeon. You know, you've got the skills and you've done the hardest cases. You don't have the wisdom and the knowledge and the ability to hold back yet, but you want to launch. But then again, your kids are at this formative stage, just like you said, very often where that's where they really need you. And so I, like you, held back a lot for the first 10 years. I think I didn't go to any meetings. I was always feeling guilty to go to meetings. I don't know about you, but in the days before COVID, when we had travel and meetings, my husband, who's a cardiologist, would go and do his meetings and have, you know, no qualms about taking off for a week. And I would be like, oh, I can't go to this dinner meeting. I got to get home in time for, you know, what if the homework, what if they need me? So it's this weird double standard that, but someone has to be the woman of the house, or someone has to raise these children.
We have a slightly different setup because my husband and I are both in the same specialty. So we go to the dinner meetings together, and it was almost like a date night. We go to our annual meetings together, and we would actually bring the children with us, and we would take turns. And so since when I first started, I mean, basically we moved to Hawaii. I had been working as a faculty member at Boston Children's, and my husband hated the cold. So we moved to Hawaii, which is where he's from. And we found out we were pregnant the first weekend we moved here, which was crazy, but we were really trying to set up the practice and to grow it. And so I actually did not hold back. So for the first 8 years, I was really all in, but we had a really wonderful support system. I had a great, great nanny, and she was fantastic. And I actually had a nursery in my office, and then she would come over there and she would help answer phones and do all of this other stuff in the office when the babies were sleeping. So I was able, that allowed me to be all in to really grow the practice. And then it's in the last 2 years that I've started to say, okay, I can actually take a little bit of a step back and do my admin work from home and do some telemedicines and balance it a little bit in that way. But yeah, we've always taken our children to all the meetings. I spoke on a panel at the Academy of Ophthalmology last year, and my husband, usually we alternate. We look at the schedule and we say, okay, you're going to take care of the kids. I want to go to this seminar. You do this wet lab. And he wanted to go to wet lab and I was speaking. So I just brought the kids and they sat in the back of the room, and they got to go into the speaker room, and they like ate all the, you know, the cookies, and everybody was taking pictures of them thinking they were so cute. And it was just really, I mean, it's kind of the epitome of what I do. And I wanted my daughter and I want my kids to see me up on that stage. So it was great that they were able to do that. And they just got a kick out of being at the Academy of Ophthalmology.
That's amazing. That's such a, I think it's important that we set this model for them, that we are boss girls, that we do work hard and we're passionate about education and teaching and learning, taking care of patients. Because when they see us working hard, long hours, it instills in them probably this good sense of what's required in life to, you know, to do, to succeed, I think.
Absolutely. And I think it's not just important for my daughter to see it, but for my sons to see it as well, right? Because I think they need to see women in that role also. And they're very aware of that and of the work, and also that I will always make time for them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important for them to just feel loved and to know that I don't drop everything at all the times that they request me to do so, but I am there for them. So that's been really nice. And it's been a good, just kind of a reevaluation, I think, with 2020 and just the pace of life and what's important.
It actually was a good reset because it did make me feel like I was working way too hard. But it's funny, you build this practice, you wait so many years for it to grow and thrive and be successful, and then you have to be the captain at the helm of the ship. You just can't step away, and the ocean doesn't stop churning. It's very interesting, the treadmill that we put ourselves on, because it doesn't stop.
It's true. And I think that's really key what you said, that we put ourselves on. I mean, it's funny because sometimes I think we go through all the stages, right? We get into the best med school, we match in the best residency, and you keep going and you keep plodding along because this path is set forward in front of you. And then you turn and look around and like, I'm double and triple booked right now. And I'm getting burnt out. And I remember talking, I think, to my cousin, who's not in medicine at all, he's business. And he said, but can't you dictate your schedule? And it's like, Yes, but like, so why don't you cut back on your patients if they're, you know, and it's so funny because we don't think like that, right? To take, it's always the next step, grow, grow, grow. And to take that kind of pause and reevaluate and decide, maybe it's not in my best interest to keep growing. And maybe it is in my best interest to hit pause, which is not going backwards. But that was really pivotal for us, because when we shut down, I'm sure you probably had to shut down as well. We shut down for 6 weeks in March and April. And when we opened back up in May, we did so at very reduced capacity just because we were trying to figure out our protocols. And my husband and I just turned to each other and said, we like this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is better for us, and we feel more present in our family life. And neither of us is the kind of person that needs tons of, you know, fancy things. I drive a Honda minivan. I don't have vacation homes. So I want to be able to just pay for my children's education and be present. It's much more important for me to be present. So we took some steps in that regard and just tried to cut expenses in the office so that we can streamline things. But I think it's just important for women in medicine, especially because I think we tend to push ourselves a lot because we're used to doing that. And sometimes you really have to think, is this really in alignment with what I want?
Mm-hmm. It's very true, but it's also challenging because you're brought up in this culture of medicine, which is to help people, and then people are calling, they need to get in, they want to get in, and you feel bad to say no. It's learning how to say no that's hard. And also, it's the scarcity mindset of like, okay, well, if I say no to this patient, will we have patients tomorrow? And as soon as you get like 3 cancellations, you're like, oh my God, you need to double book my schedule so I don't have an empty schedule.
Exactly. No, that's exactly, I mean, it's very hard. And I feel that too, especially with my peds patients, when they're calling, I'm like, well, I only have one day a week where I do afternoon appointments because I need to be at home with my children. I need to pick them up from school now that there's no after school activities. And it's hard because I know if I opened up afternoon appointments that I could be a lot busier, but we have to get rid of that scarcity mindset, I think, right? But it's so prevalent. It's so difficult.
It really is. But when you really do look at what do you need in life to be happy, it's not that much. But it's also challenging that I have built this whole infrastructure. I'm sure you have too, where the overhead is intense in the office setting. And like, you know, when you start to, they didn't teach entrepreneurship in med school.
They did not.
They needed to have had a whole semester on that. Really, honestly, it would have helped a lot.
It really would have. I mean, just basics about looking at a P&L statement or manage. I mean, just really simple things would have been helpful. I feel like a lot of the courses that are out there about how to grow your practice and how to soar, but sometimes there's just not the simple basics available for entrepreneurs. But
definitely agree. And tell us about the Attending Lounge. So that's your own little project, a membership group, and it's a really awesome way to mentor people. What do you do with the Attending Lounge?
So that came out of a hashtag campaign I started a few years ago on Instagram because I was getting exactly those messages. Oh, I was told I can't be a doctor and a mom or a surgeon and a mom. So at first I just asked a few of my friends that were female surgeons, because sometimes that can be a little bit trickier balance. We have morning start times. Sometimes we have emergency surgeries, how they balanced just their life and being a surgeon and a woman, and not all were mothers. And it grew into just this huge group of women. By the end, it was about 35 women that wanted to participate to share their mentorship advice with the younger generation, because I just don't think we have to repeat it every single time. Why do we need to reinvent the wheel? I mean, when I was in medical school, I graduated from Cornell in 2002. My mentor was a general surgeon and a female, like a real badass surgeon. But I honestly had no idea if she was married. I had no idea if she had kids. I didn't know what she did for childcare. These are questions that we struggle with, and we need to know the answers to. And it would have helped to know, oh, I have a babysitter 40 hours a week. That's how I make my life work. And I felt like we needed to pull back the curtain to show the reality of how it works. I don't think that a lot of people explain, I have an au pair, or I have a nanny, and it's okay to have those things. It's okay to have your tribe that supports you, but we can't do it alone. So
I don't think we even ask. If you're so grateful to get a mentor who's a surgeon and a woman, that you're like, let me just stick to the academics because I need to first graduate, first be a surgeon, and first know how to use my hands and my brain. And then later we can talk about love and the heart and the children. But that you never get to that later, and that's like so critical. But
and you feel like it's a barrier that you don't want to cross that line. Like it's too
personal,
right?
Yeah. My mentor was a woman ENT surgeon also who had four kids, and now I have four kids, but I would have never asked her. So
exactly.
You know, what'd you do with your kids when you were in the operating room all this time? I never asked her anything. I just assumed she was like somehow the queen of mastering it all.
I know. It's funny because I had one retina surgeon and she was amazing at NYU, and she would tell us, my nanny is the best paid nanny. And she would tell us, I pay her this amount of dollars. This, I got to go pick up my kids. She was just, she'd wear her pearls and her Von Cleef and the OR. I mean, she was just amazing. And I love that she was really transparent about it, but I wanted to bring that to other pre-meds, med students, residents, and even young attending. So the thing I love about the membership is I have two high school sophomores that are in the membership that are just so interested in medicine and OB, and they're volunteering all the way up to attending physicians that are 1 to 2 years outside of training. And to see the cross mentorship is really nice too. The peer-to-peer mentorship, you know, it's not just me doing group coaching. It's a true membership. And I really just get reinvigorated every time we do our live Zooms with guests from the all around, from different specialties. And it's reinvigorating for me because it makes me love medicine to see it through their eyes too, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. I think you know, if you're a pre-med and you get the right advice from the right people, doors will open for you and the mindset will change. But it really is hard for young girls because you first are cursed by the stereotypes that your parents have inherited because they inflict that on you growing up, whether they think that only the brothers in the family can be doctors or, you know, it's just this chronic thing where people are bred and raised a certain way. I remember when I wanted to go to med school and residency, I met one of my dad's orthopedic surgeon friends, and his advice was, he was trying to be a nice guy and tell me I deserved a beautiful, fabulous, fancy life, but he was like, why do you want to be a doctor? You should go and get married and have nice children and enjoy your life and not work so hard. And now, looking, I was so mortally offended. I was like, I want to be a doctor. Why am I supposed to go have children? But now looking back, I realize he was just being a nice old guy. And like children are the best part of life. And yes, so wouldn't it be fun to just be like a yoga mom who walks around the park every day and takes care of kids. But I want more for myself. So I want us to be able to mentor women starting out. And I think there's a huge role for that. With so many kids in your family, you must be experiencing a lot of homeschool. So is Hawaii back to regular in-person school?
The public schools are not. They're doing kind of a hybrid. My kids are in private school. So my second and third grader have been full-time in-person school since about October, which is great. And my sixth grader has been doing hybrid school. So 1 week on, 1 week off. So he's not the most organized kid. And it was a big transition from elementary to middle school, even though it's the same school. So I've really had to just shift my mindset and really help him with just getting organized, turning in assignments. It's a whole job in and of itself.
It's a whole second shift. I always tell my staff, like, I'm going home, I got to start my next shift. I got to do the dinner, the homework, the bath, the like cleaning up the house, so getting the birthday.
Menu planning, grocery shop. I mean, even if you're not doing the grocery shopping, these things are on your, you know, who's going to be picking up the kid, who's going to be, what are we eating for dinner? Did I buy snacks for them? You know, all of those things still fall, I think, in most households, especially even in two-physician households. And my husband is fantastic. He's a great dad. He's a good husband. But these things don't just, you know, pop into his brain, you know.
It's true. Like when I'm at Target, I'm buying stuff for like, okay, not only this week, but next week and the holiday coming up and the birthday 2 weeks after that. And then the grandma's birthday that's coming. And like men don't think like that. I'm sorry, but they don't. Sorry, men.
I have to give him a very specific list. And he'll buy the items on that list, but he's not thinking,
We'll talk a little bit about some things in terms of people being on their screens, like now 24/7, literally children are on computer screens from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. and then the homework begins, and that's from like, you know, 5 p.m. till 9 p.m. So that's a very long day of intense staring. What are the things that we need to worry about? Kids becoming nearsighted prematurely, or, you know, what should we be doing?
So definitely excessive near work, whether it's a screen or just reading a book or writing or anything that's up close work, has been linked to nearsightedness. So, you know, and right now there's just not a lot that can be done, especially if you're in virtual school. The fact of the matter is that these kids are going to be on a device 8 hours a day. I make sure that the device is at least 18 to 24 inches away from them so that it's not as up close, so that it decreases that accommodative or focusing demand. Mm-hmm. 2 hours a day of sunlight has also been shown to be beneficial at preventing the progression of nearsightedness. So that's super easy in Hawaii to do. Like, you know, my kids are surfing on the weekends. It's not as easy in the rest of the country or in the rest of the world. But that's something that I recommend as well. And then even for adults, and that sunlight study, a lot of the sunlight studies done in Australia even showed an effect well into your 20s of slowing that nearsightedness progression down with 2 hours a day of sunlight. So
is that why is that? Is that when you're, because you're in the sun, you're probably doing an outdoor activity where you're not engaged with the screen and you're looking at, you know, the walk.
No,
you're on
the they actually found it wasn't linked to being physically active. And some of the studies looked at just reading outdoors was good enough as well. So there's something about, they don't know if it's the vitamin D, they were looking at the autofluorescence, or if it has to do with the focusing muscles. They're not exactly sure what the mechanism of action is, but it's been shown a couple of times in various studies. So it's, and that's an easy one. So I recommend that to all my patients. I recommend they take frequent breaks every 20 minutes, take a 20-second break where you look at something 20 feet away. Mm-hmm. It helps reset the focusing muscles for kids and adults. And then using artificial tear lubrication, because when you're on a device, you tend not to blink as much. So if your eyes are getting dry, which I think a lot of people will think that the fatigue is from the blue light or the eye strains from the blue light. And oftentimes it can just be from dry eyes or from just the excessive focusing up close.
Mm, those are all great tips. And then in terms of adults, anything specific to adults?
Like same, the 2020 goal goes for adults, the artificial tear lubrication also for adults, and just remembering a blink, especially for adults, because our eyes tend to be drier. Contact lens wearers have drier eyes than non-contact lens wearers. Women have drier eyes than men. So yeah, definitely.
I've been reading about some new laser treatments that might help improve dry eyes. Is there anything new on the horizon for that as we age?
Yes, there's IPL, which is one of the light treatments that for dry eyes, as well as LipiFlow, which is kind of like a heat massage thing for dry eyes. So there's some interesting treatments for dry eyes that I think are providing a lot of relief for patients.
Oh, good, good. And how about in terms of aging around the eyes? Do you do any cosmetic tear trough fillers or Botox or anything like
that? I do both of those, tear trough fillers and Botox around the eyes. And I think it just, especially now when everyone only sees the eyes, it just helps people feel a lot more confident about themselves and just to feel a little bit more empowered.
I've been reading a lot of studies about how long filler lasts around the eyes. And even though it's technically a one-year product that you guys, in your ophthalmology cases, like when I do blepharoplasty, I'll sometimes find old filler that's been there like 5 to 7 years that's existing a lot longer than the normal duration of filler. Have you seen
that? Wow, 5 to 7 years. I mean, I've always heard the quote, 18 months for under the eyes. And then of course, like 6 months for lips or, you know, those areas that you use a lot, but that's interesting, 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, we're finding now that one or two injections around the eyes is probably going to be sufficient. And by the third time, maybe that's enough to where you don't even have to repeat for 3 to 5 years. So I'm hoping people will start to underdo under eye filler because...
I always tell patients too. I mean, it draws in water. So I'm going to leave you at 80%, right? And there's this tendency they just want more
perfection.
And more sometimes, yes. And you have to tell them it's going to look awful if I fill you the way that you expect to be filled right now. Just give it the 2 weeks and see how it looks, because I think you'll be happy. But yes, it's it's hard sometimes to, because I, as someone that has those under eye circles as well, it can be something you hate to see in yourself when you stare at the mirror, but to break people of that habit of trying to get it every time they go in for their Botox is
a challenge. Are there any treatments that you recommend for dark circles in terms of people who have a lot of venous pooling? Is it possible to laser ablate or treat, you know, large allergy venous pooling?
I don't do any laser. I mean, first I try to treat the underlying condition. A lot of allergies tend to cause it. There's so many ocular problems that can cause the darkening. But then, of course, in Indian women, some of that's just genetic. So,
yeah. Yeah, Indian skin under the eyes, in a lot of ethnicities, there's this dark pigmentation that's almost tattooed into the dermis, which really needs peels, bleaching creams, and that kind of thing is better. In terms of your supplements, what are you taking in order to improve your eye health long term?
Omega-3 vitamins are fantastic. They have a lot of variety of effects, especially with dry eyes. So it is something that I recommend for adult patients, as well as even the pediatric patients. They come in a gummy form. So I think that's really helpful for just combating the dry eyes that a lot of patients are experiencing too. And then if they have a history of macular degeneration, they can get the AREDS2 formulation, which has a lot of antioxidants. It's specifically formulated with the vitamins and minerals that were used in the age-related eye disease study against for macular degeneration. But if they don't have it, it's not shown to be preventative, so I don't recommend it just, you know, for you and I if we don't have any macular degeneration.
And that's called AREDS, age-related.
AREDS. So you can buy all different types of brands, but it should say on their AREDS2 formulation or something specific to on the bottle. So. But awesome. Just green leafy vegetables, you know, just staying very antioxidant healthy is what I recommend routinely.
That's perfect. Well, it's been so fun chatting with you. You are such an inspiration to so many women out there. You're going to perform on stage on the Pinnacle Conference coming up soon, or is that going to be virtual this year?
So we did a virtual one last month, and we now have a membership because with things looking the way they are, I don't know if we're going to have an in-person event this year, but we felt that women that were a little bit more established in their careers needed this support in this community regarding leadership and goal setting and self-care. So we have created a membership site for them as well. So a little bit separate than my attending lounge. It's for a little bit more, you know, more advanced in their careers, but also a really wonderful space. And that's being done. I'm doing that with three other women physicians, Natalie Crawford, Pam Mehta, and Danielle Jones, aka Mama Dr. Jones. So it's a really fun thing to do with them.
All really great ladies to follow on Instagram. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're pre-med or in med school, in residency, fellowship, or just becoming an attending, you should join and get advice at every stage in your life. We need to be a support network for each other, I would say. And I can't wait to come visit you in Hawaii one of these days.
That would be awesome. I would love that.
Are we still having to quarantine when we get to Hawaii?
As of now, yes, unless you do the COVID testing. So beforehand, and but if you do the COVID testing, at least on Oahu, 72 hours with a special partner, then you can avoid the quarantine.
Oh, okay, perfect. Well, unfortunately, LA is doing really poorly, so don't come here. But in the future, someday, I'd love to have you come out, and it'd be great to meet in person.
That would be wonderful.
So ophthalmology is one of the best specialties. Those of you who are interested to get into it, you should check out Dr. Rupa Wang. Where can people find you on your Instagram and your various handles?
So everything is pretty much the same. It's Dr. Dr. Rupa Wang, R-U-P-A-W-O-N-G, no periods or hyphens or dots or any of that. So all one word, Dr. Rupa Wang. I am on Instagram there. I'm on YouTube as well as TikTok. With those handles and Twitter, but I'm like barely on Twitter. So, and I also have a personal website. So if you're interested in updates about Pinnacle or attending lounge, you can get there through my website, drrupawang.com.
Perfect. It's been so great chatting with you. Thanks so much for all your input to make our eyes healthier and to be better women, boss girl surgeons. So
thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Have a great day. That's it for now, guys. Thanks for tuning in. This is Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. You can find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our amazing skincare. And Rupa, I'm going to send you my eye cream to try. You're going to love it.
I would love it.
And my vitamin C serum, which is a really great antioxidant protectant, as well as maybe some sunscreen. Because I heard Hawaii is outlawing all of the sunscreens that have oxybenzoate in them.
Yes, oxybenzoate and octinoxate. Those are both all being banned. So we are switching to zinc and titanium.
There you go. And that's my belief. The mineral sunscreens are the best. So titanium dioxide and zinc. Perfect.
I love it. Thank you so much.
All right. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.